You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's, with a positive message throughout. Hello and welcome to episode 52 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. We've now officially been going one year into the podcast, and I'm delighted to welcome to our 1 year show, Gemma. Welcome to the podcast, Gemma.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you so much for coming on. It's an absolute pleasure to have you and to make the year long episode a Hirschsprung's one. Is all the better.
Yeah.
Now we're here to talk about your daughter, Dorothy, who was diagnosed with Hirschsprung's disease. Would you like to take me back, as where I usually start, the beginning? Would you like to take us back to the start of Dorothy's journey?
Yeah, sure. So Dorothy was born September 2018. Pregnancy was all okay. The difference, so I've got an older child as well, a son who's 10. And throughout the pregnancy was fine, but she didn't move as much as him. And I don't know if that's, you know, you look back on things, but she definitely, like, I went in for a few extra scans, etc. So she was definitely very, very still. But every, apart from that, everything fine. She was born elective cesarean. So again, that all went fine. Thursday morning, presented with a beautiful baby girl, how, you know, all lovely. So she was born in Bath Hospital because we lived in Warminster at the time. And then I remember we went up to the room. Again, she was fine, but she just slept. She just slept. She didn't cry. She didn't do anything. She also wasn't interested in feeding. Tried a few times, I breastfed, she just wasn't interested. But we thought, me and my husband, well, maybe this is a cesarean child. My first one wasn't. Maybe this is a difference with a cesarean baby. We didn't know exactly, you know, you just don't know these things. So that first Thursday, she slept, she didn't really eat. They even came, I think that evening, they brought the lactation specialist around to try and get her to fit to feed. She was sick a few times, but they weren't too concerned because it was like a yellowy colour. And then Friday came, still the same, still hadn't really fed. Now, she hadn't passed her meconium. The issue we had, so they tried to discharge us that morning. It actually got missed that she hadn't passed her meconium. So the only reason we managed to stay is because I said I'd had cesarean and I'm not ready to go home. So it was quite a scary start, to be honest, because of that. So I managed to push them to let us stay for another night. And I'm so thankful we did, because my mum and dad were visiting that evening on Friday. And I will never forget, I was lying in the bed. My mum was holding Dorothy, you know, meeting her granddaughter, and suddenly green bile projectile out of her. So James ran out to go and get one of the midwives. They came in, went and got another midwife. She came in. They cooled down. Bath's got a NICU down below. So they cooled down to a doctor at the NICU. She came running up. Looked at that and went, oh, that's not right. That's not the right colour. And there's some things that stick in your head. So throughout this, there were some moments that I don't think I'll ever forget. And she turned to the midwife and said, oh, she's passed a meconium. And the midwife looked at them and went, and me and James both at the same time went, no. And the face of that midwife, I'll never, you know, it still chills me to this day because I think she then realised, oops, like this is something's really wrong here. So then the next bit's a bit of a blur because it all happened so quickly. She got transported straight down to the NICU. plugged into the machine, you know, into the incubator, all that. They put a tube into her and started syringing the bile out, suctioning the bile that way. And there was just so much of that. They, you know, did one, emptied it, did another one. So I managed to walk down to the NICU, still not knowing what was going on. You know, nothing had been mentioned why this is happening. So we still didn't know why Dorothy was puking like this green. They said it was an avocado colour. Then that was the first time they said, oh, something could be wrong with her, as in this isn't right. So this was the first time we went, okay, she's not just sleepy. She's not just not feeding because she's a cesarean baby. Obviously, we now know that's not nothing to do with it. Something's wrong with her. Obviously, your mind just goes, what's going on? We didn't know what to think. They then discussed with us what they were doing. So they were taking this bile out of her. And obviously now they realised that she hadn't passed meconium. They said, oh, it's a blockage. And they said it could be Hirschsprung's. And it was mentioned to us then. And it was because one of the nurses, and I can't remember the connection, but she either had a family member or knew of somebody who had Hirschsprung's. So because of that, it was then mentioned to us quite early on in the process. Of course, never heard of it before.
No.
Didn't know what it was. Didn't know if it was serious, if it was, not, you know, didn't know. But they did say to us, it's probably just a blockage. Don't worry. It's just a blockage. So that's what you cling on to.
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
Just a blockage. She'll be fine.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So they took some x-rays. They brought in the x-ray machine, wheeled it over, took an x-ray, and they sent them off to Bristol because that's the closest to a children's hospital. But they said, we'll wait. And then you're there going, come on, do something. What's going on? And they're kind of, oh, you know, they were fabulous. The Bath NICU were absolutely wonderful. Once she calmed down and they've managed to get her to a place where they were happy, they even got her out and they put her on me so I could cuddle her, you know, because so they didn't have to stay in this machine. That Friday night, they said, well, you need to go back up and try and get some sleep. Me and my husband didn't want to leave her. So they wheeled out this iPad on a stick on wheels with a camera that they then put up against her incubator, whatever it's called. Sorry, I'm not very good with the technical language.
Yeah, that's what incubator sounds about right.
And so we took that back up and had it by our bed. I'm not sure we got any more sleep than we would but you know, they try, it's these things that they try to do to ease it. So Saturday morning we went back down with her. They'd heard back from Bristol, and they made the decision, yes, she needs to go for further testing, because nothing, she still hadn't passed anything, and they were still having to get this bile out of her, and she still obviously wasn't feeding or anything. So 12 o'clock the ambulance arrived. James had to move the car. And obviously, I couldn't drive, having cesarean. And again, something they said. Well, and I said, well, I'm coming in the ambulance with her. And they said, oh, I don't think you'll be able to get in because it's a big step. And I turned to them and said, I'd get on a horse if I could, if I needed to. And I think any mum out there would agree, nothing would stop you. So I did get into the ambulance, probably an ambulance. I don't know how old it was, but I'll tell you now, it was the most uncomfortable, painful ride of my life. I felt every bump. Yeah, but I was with Dorothy, so you know, you just, any parent, you just do it, don't you? So we drove to Bristol, walked through the A&E, wheeling her through. James was obviously still driving at this point to get there, so we got put onto the actual children's ward. Now, so Bristol has a St Michael's, which is babies, and the children's ward, which is actually for children.
Right.
They made the decision, because it could have been Hirschsprung's, or it could have been something that needed surgery. Obviously, they didn't know at the time. The children's ward is equipped for that because that's where the surgeries all happen, whereas at Michael's isn't. So they made the decision to take us there. So we were very lucky and they had a room free because obviously Dorothy being newborn, the chance of infection and everything was high. So they did put us into a room, but of course it was for children. So she was on a bed. She wasn't in a little, you know, she was this tiny little baby, but on this bed. And the nurses at Bristol Children's Hospital were fantastic. They looked after us so well. I was entitled to food because I'd just given birth, but they made sure James had some too. They let him stay. We were only really meant to have one parent in because, again, if your child's older, it's still not nice, but it's more manageable. But I was struggling to walk. You know, I was meant to be in a bed. So they let him stay. He slept in a chair for a week, but he's in the military. He's used to that, I think. But the fact that we were together was amazing. One thing I did forget to mention was on the day Dorothy was born, my eldest did break his arm.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so he did break his arm, unfortunately. He was fine, but it was funny because we remember that happened before this happened with Dorothy, and me and James were like, oh, you know, that's nothing, about, you know, that's the worst thing. That's...
No, that's...
I'll give you a mini couple of days. So he ended up spending a week with my mum, so he was fine, and it was nice not having to worry about him. He was well looked after. He was safe. So that was he was kept out of it, out of the drama, out of all that, because he was only 4 at the time. So, you know. So we were in Bristol, settled in. They took her for an X-ray Saturday evening where they put the solution up to see where the blockage is and to do the bowels. So my father-in-law had rushed up from Portsmouth by then. Yeah, he got on his car and he came up to support us. James went into the X-ray. I remember sitting outside with my father-in-law. And this is, again, where it goes a bit bumpy. So after the initial bath trying to discharge us, there's another bump in the road. I think because she's a girl and there's no... I'm sorry, I should say, and I'm jumping around here.
No, go for it.
There's no history of Hirschsprung's in either of our families anywhere.
Right.
And she's a girl. So as you know, it's a very rare disease and it's even rarer in females. So I just really thought the chances of her having it were so, so slim that they just really thought she didn't have it. So this doctor came out and said, I shouldn't really tell you this, but it's just a blockage. You're okay. She's okay. So I stood up, obviously relief, because by then we'd talked to people like Hirschsprung's. We found out what Hirschsprung's was. And at the time, obviously, we thought, well, we don't want that for our daughter, you know. So when he came out and said, it's just blockage, the relief, you know, hugged him, hugged my father-in-law. We were just so, oh, brilliant. We'll be home tomorrow. You know, wonderful. We can forget this and get on with everything. Because they said putting the solution up for this X-ray usually then flushes them out. So she did then. The meconium came out and a little bit came out. So we were like, oh, brilliant. So took her back to her room and she still just slept. Nothing changed in her. She still wasn't interested in feeding. She still just slept. She was very docile. Didn't cry, you know, really nothing that a newborn baby does. She just wasn't doing any of it. But because they'd said it was a blockage and the radio, you know, they looked at the X-rays, they said that it's just a blockage. They were like, no, she's fine. So they then tried, because she wasn't feeding, they tried to feed her electrolytes for a bottle. Nurse came in. Now, I've not had much experience with hospitals, luckily, in my life. So I didn't know how they work. And I didn't realise that hospitals weren't Monday to Sunday.
Right.
There's Monday to Friday.
Yeah.
So because we went on a Saturday, the staff in there, I mean, they were still great, but the radiographer that read the X-rays wasn't, let's say, the one who reads them from Monday to Friday.
Okay.
So he did read it wrong. He made a mistake. People do. We don't have any ill feeling. These things happen. So still wasn't So they were going to discharge us on Tuesday again.
So here we go.
A second time.
Yes. So,
right.
And again, I think you've got to advocate for your children. They can't speak for themselves. You have to stand up. And so we'd met Miss McNally by then, who is the consultant, or was the consultant at Bristol Children's Hospital. She'd come in so this was from Saturday to Tuesday. She'd come in and spoke to us when it could have been Hirschsprung's and explained it. And, and we were told by the nurses there and other doctors, oh, she's the best bowel specialist from the South. She's really good. You know, so if it is Hirschsprung's, she's the best hands. She knows what she's talking about. So you put your confidence in them, you put faith in them, you go, okay, they know what they're doing. We have no idea. And so Tuesday morning she came in with her team and said, ready to discharge, Dorothy, how you're feeling? And I just said, can you just look at her one more time, please? Because her tummy is not looking right. You know, her bowels obviously had expanded again, had filled up again with the milk that I tried to give her and with the electrolytes, etc., that they were trying to give her. And she pulled back the blanket. And again, never forget the face of Miss McNally. You know, it's the same face as the midwife. And it just dropped. And she went, oh. Because by that time, you could see the imprint of her bowel. It had enlarged so much against her tummy that you could actually see it slightly. Because, of course, she was only a couple of days old. So it's very small. And, of course, Miss McNally said, well, that's not right. So took her. Again, things happened. I would think for them, it's quickly. For me and James, it wasn't quickly. I mean, every time a nurse comes in, have you got the results? Have you heard something? And they're like, no, but you know. So because, of course, they've got other patients and things. But when your focus is that one child, you want answers straight away. So they started doing the, getting rid of the bile again out of her. I can't remember if they started doing washouts then. I honestly can't remember. It's all a bit, it all gets a bit blurred together. Bearing in mind, given birth a few days before, very hurt when I coughed, it was, I was having to express milk. My mum ran out and got a hand pump for me because the one at the hospital wasn't very good because we weren't in the baby's ward. So it was all a bit. All these things are happening as well. Because they were going to do a biopsy on the Monday, but they cancelled it because they said it was a blockage. So then they scheduled another biopsy in. And I think they scheduled that in on the Wednesday. So this was, of course, again, you think on the next day, but it's a long time when your baby is poorly. Even 24 hours is a long time to wait. So they did the biopsy Wednesday morning. And I think by then we were hoping it was Hirschsprung's. We knew it wasn't just a blockage. We knew there was something more going on. And I think if it wasn't Hirschsprung's, what was it? They'd have to do more tests, more things to find out. And I just think by then we were actually, it's weird because obviously 2 days earlier we were hoping anything but Hirschsprung's. And now, our mindset had definitely changed, I think, by then. So they did the biopsy on Wednesday, and then Friday they walked in and confirmed Hirschsprung's. And I think, it was weird, but it was a relief. It was a relief.
Yeah,
to get that diagnosis, yeah.
I was about to say, was that then a relief at that point from going from, oh, I really hope it's not, to them, well, at least we know what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's a really weird mindset to go through, to be so, oh, it can't, can't be that. And then actually to have a diagnosis, because then they can do something, they can help her, they know what they're doing. So then, like I said, I can't remember if they were doing washouts previously, but they definitely were then. And I mean, her tummy went up, right down. She then started feeding. I do remember. Yeah, so I think it was then, because once they did the washout, she started feeding. She started crying. She started all these things that babies are meant to do, she was doing. So they then spoke to us about, obviously, all the things that's going to entail, what Hirschsprungs is. We were obviously Googling all we can. I mean, there's stuff out there, but it's hard to find sometimes. You know, there's not that much on Hirschsprungs. So you don't, for someone new that's never heard of it before, it's hard to find what you're looking for. And also the internet can be that kind of place where is what you're looking at factual? So we obviously knew more about it and what it was going to be. So then they said to us, we're going to operate on her as a baby. They can operate on babies now, which they said is still quite new in the scheme of surgeries. Because they used to do it on wait till they're a bit older, a bit stronger. So Dorothy, she wasn't the first by any means, but it was still quite a new procedure on babies, which we were all for, because if they waited till she was three, it would have been another surgery, a stoma attached. And then, you know, she was a bit older. So they said, are you happy to do the washouts? We said, brilliant. They said, because you can do the washouts, you can take her home for the 2 months, and then she can have the surgery in 2 months. We said, brilliant. And it's another thing. I mean, the nurses said to us, you know, a few years ago, the washouts were only performed by doctors. Then they were only performed by nurses. So the parents weren't allowed to do them. So you had to stay. So, you know, a few years ago, we would have had, I say a few years ago, she's six now. So I mean, a few years ago before Dorothy was born.
Yeah.
We would have had to stay in hospital for those 2 months because, or go in the morning, come back, go in the evening, which we lived an hour and a half from Bristol at the time. So that wouldn't have been feasible. So the fact that we could do the washouts at home was amazing. You know, all these things that you look back and go, gosh, thank goodness for that, because it made it so much more manageable and such a nice, you know, we'd go home and be with our son. He came and visited Dorothy in hospital. Yeah, you know, which was lovely. So we ended up taking her home on the Saturday. So she was in hospital from the Thursday to the following Saturday. Went home with all the gear, you know, because we had to then obviously have all the saline, the tubes, the syringe, all that stuff washed out. And but we were home, and I think that was a big thing as well. That was a big relief. We were home. We were family again. And obviously it wasn't the first, you know, the first 2 months with her, she had a washout in the morning and a washout in the evening. And they worked for her. And again, her tummy would, I mean, I've got photos of her tummy before washout and then, you know, after washout. It's definitely a two-person job. So I'm so thankful my husband was there with me and we could do it together. And in fact, it became a three-person job because Theo would stand at Dorothy's head and make her giggle and laugh, you know, and entertain her. And so that was lovely. So then operation was scheduled for the 22nd of November. So back up to Bristol. They explained to us that they don't know, like with all Hirschsprungs cases, how much of her bowel will be removed until they go in. It was keyhole, so she actually had the swerve procedure, the pull through. We took her in. We were on the ward then, so she went in on the 22nd, and went in for the operation. And we were advised to go away from the hospital. We were advised to leave and not sit there and dwell, because obviously it's a long operation. They biopsy, test, and come back. I mean, it's incredible to me that they can do this on such a small head.
Yeah.
He was still so tiny. And then the whole time we went into Bristol, we got some lunch, but we were obviously waiting for the phone, really wishing the phone wasn't going to win, because we knew if it did, it would be them saying, it's longer than we thought, we've had to remove it all, or because that was still a possibility. You just don't know till they're in there. As it transpires, she was extremely lucky, and she had short segment. So she had, I've got it written down here how much it was in the end. it was 21.6 centimeters removed. So she had her main bit was about 12 centimeters. Then she had the transition zone, and then they take a little bit of healthy bowel just to really make sure that they've got it all. So that was another relief. That was another, you know, this was the last kind of unknown. And that's scale. Yeah. You know, I think with Hirschsprung's, a lot of it is unknown. Every case
still is. I mean, even after, I was speaking to a doctor the other day, and she's worked in Hirschsprung's for years, and she was saying, you know, there's still so much we don't know now. So yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's and each case is so unique, which is something we didn't, you know, again after research, and what works for one child doesn't work for another. What work, you know, and then just every so unique that you can't really base. Oh well, that worked for them. So hence going into the operation, they don't even know how much bowel they have to remove until they get in there, which is really scary. So she got a slight temperature after that, but that was fine. So we actually went home. She was in hospital for 2 nights, went home the next day. So the washouts then stopped, and we had to do dilation. So because of the surgery, to stop the scar tissue closing in as it healed, we had to dilate her with this metal bar. And that was the point where I had to bow out, because I couldn't handle that. That was my, I think, limit of what I could do. So, you know, thankfully my husband could do it. And I'd still, it's, you know, one of those things I look back at, and I wasn't there to help him through that, but I couldn't. Yeah, I think it was just my limit. I just couldn't do that. But he did, and he obviously had to. And we were obviously having frequent visits with Bristol, Miss McNally, checking everything was okay. They increased the diameter of the bar to do that. And she had to do that for quite a few months to stop it healing. But all was going okay. All was fine. She was doing really well. She was doing better than me. If I put that, I struggled that first year of her life. I really did. Not so much because of the Hirschsprung's. I think everything that happened, and then the not knowing.
Yes, that makes absolute sense. And yeah. I think that's something when I talk to a lot of parents. Something that sometimes gets brought up, sometimes that gets missed, the toll it takes on the mothers and fathers. I think some hospitals are very aware of it. Some are sort of solely focused on the child. And I can understand that. I can totally understand that. But that makes a lot of sense to me, that actually what you went through, and you've explained that really, really well, but it was only, 5 days? I mean, all of the things you went through in less than a week is more than a lot of people go through in their entire lifetime.
Yeah,
you know, and I think the fact that you recognize, actually, this has taken an awful lot on me, is really good in terms of self-awareness as well. Because I think, that is an awful lot to go through.
Yeah, it was a lot, I think. So it was. That was difficult, and I couldn't have spoken to you about this 6 years ago, 5 years ago. I didn't really speak to anybody about it. I shut it away in a way. You know, priority was Dorothy, of course. Then, obviously, the big thing, I think, in our heads was the enterocolitis risk. She was young. Her immune system wasn't developed. And I really built it up in my head that was it. She was going to spend her life kind of, you know, in cotton wool and not be able to do anything. And this was going to ruin her life. And it was, you know, I really did get to that place. And then unfortunately, on December 22nd, she did get taken into hospital. She was fine. Everything, she didn't have a temperature or anything like that. But, you know, they tell you the signs to look out for. And her wind that she passed was the most foul smelling thing we have ever experienced. And again, we were a bit like, well, but it was awful. But because she didn't have a temperature or anything else, we were a bit. But the team at Bristol are great, and that we had the a line to the stoma nurses. Even though Dorothy didn't have a stoma, they're bowel specialists, Claire and Hillary, and they've helped us out in those early days. They were always on the end of the phone, so they were our place to go. You know, no question too small. Nothing was an issue. But they told us to bring her in, and she did. She got put on the intravenous drip and all that to get it through. So unfortunately, she did spend her first Christmas in hospital.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
But she doesn't remember any of it, you know.
Oh, so I think
this is the thing we take back, that because it was so young, she doesn't remember. She's got her magic tummy. She says the doctors fixed her magic tummy. She's very proudly, because again, it was all, you know, through keyhole. So she's only got two little scars on her tummy. I did ask her about Hirschsprungs, and I said, you know, I said to her, because I told her I was speaking to you, and she was very excited about that. And I think she's proud. She's proud of it, you know. Yeah, she is. We celebrate every time. So she started pooing probably, well, just before one. I think she's in nappy still. And I remember sending my husband a video, and I was like, she's pooed. I remember opening that nappy, and I was like, she's pooed. My gosh, like, I've never been so excited in my life. She was... must have been January, February time, so she had the operation in November. So it took her a while to start pooing. But yes, so happy. And from that, when she was potty training, she'd poo on the toilet, we'd all celebrate. We had a little song we'd sing. You know, our neighbours must have thought we were barmy. Exactly. And that's the thing. I remember she went to nursery, and she went to the toilet there, and she came back and said, no one celebrated. Not understand. Why no one knew that she'd done a pro on the toilet. But, you know, I think each milestone, each time she's growing bigger, she's absolutely incredible. We're really lucky she's had no more instances of enterocolitis where we've had to take her to hospital. And there's all these milestones, I think, she hits that you just breathe a little bit more and you relax a little bit more. The first time she had a temperature, the first time she had diarrhea, and she didn't need, you know, and she actually just dealt with it.
Yeah.
With Calpol and you know, that. Oh, good. Okay, so every time she gets temperature, we're not going to have to rush off. So I did ask her about the Hirschsprung, sorry. And I said, you know, do you wish she didn't have it? And she said, no. And I said, oh, why not? She said, well, I like being special. And she said, sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. But it doesn't, and she's like, it doesn't change anything for me, you know. And I think because she was born with it, and also it's like diagnosed as a baby. To her, it's just her. And I hope, because again, you just don't know. Things can change. But at the moment, she's doing fantastically. And I really hope that continues. But I know that she will tackle anything that comes to her.
That's right.
But yeah, so it was a very roller coaster, her story.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And thank you so much for sharing, because there's lots of great little details in there, and it's just sort of listening to that and sort of relating it to either stories that I've heard before or my own story as well. And there's a couple of bits that really stood out for me, one of which was the advocacy, and I think I have enormous respect for doctors, nurses, people in the medical profession, have enormous respect for, I mean, God knows, you know, my life has been saved so many times by them. But I still think, you know, mother's instinct is something, you know, you can't quite put your finger on it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think it is so, so important. And you know, people who know my story know that, it, you know, that happened to me as well. You know, my mum advocated for me. She knew something was wrong. And she called the doctor out on Easter Monday, who didn't really want to come out because he wanted a day off, but he had to. And I just think, I think that's so, so important that you go, actually, deep down, I think something's not quite right.
Yeah.
And, you know, people will tell you, yeah, it's fine, don't worry. Like you said, just a blockage, you know. And I think that's so, so important to go, actually, I'm concerned here. I want to make sure that I'm 100% certain. So, yeah, I think that's huge.
But I think the other thing we found was interesting was not all doctors know what Hirschsprung's is. You know, it's so rare. That really surprised us. So when we went to our surgery, so like I said, we were at Warminster at the time. So it was a military doctor's, my husband's military. And Dr. Topham there, she was fantastic. She went off, she researched about it. She would ring me, say, how's Dorothy? When she did her first poo, she just shouted down the phone. The health visitors came to see me here at home. I didn't have to go to them. You know, the support from the medical profession, but overall, they've been absolutely fantastic. And even Bath Hospital, we spoke to them about what had happened. Midwife came to our house, chief midwife came to my house. We spoke about what happened and she rang me a week later and said, we've now put this into place. We're changing this. It wasn't more about we were complaining and wanted to get people in trouble. That wasn't our intention.
I don't know.
It was more, we don't want this to happen again, you know, for someone else, because it would have been much smoother for us if in that first 24 hours they'd gone, oh, she's not class in meconium, let's monitor, let's do this. And it would have been a much less panicked transition. So they were incredible, you know, so everyone has been incredible. Yeah, it surprises me that they said, you know, we are still staying with Bristol, even though we've moved, we now live in Surrey, because they know Hirschsprung's.
Right.
They know Dorothy, but they know Hirschsprung's. So we will always stay with them as long as we can, because we don't want to go somewhere where they don't know what Hirschsprung's is.
No, and I think that's also, you know, I understand that not every doctor and nurse can know every single thing about every single condition, you know, especially, as we know, the 1 in 5,000, the super rare ones that, you know, that we are, that can't know everything about everything. So the fact that went away, researched, said, right, could be this, could be that, etc., is excellent. So yeah, I don't blame anybody for not knowing 100% of everything. But I think as well, you touched on one thing there, when you said that you're very happy to tell Dorothy's story now, but, you know, 5 years ago was an absolute no-no. But I have huge respect for anybody at any time who wants to come on and share, whether it be their child's story, whether it be their own story or sibling story of Hirschsprung's, because I think it's fantastic. And I've mentioned before, it took me 31 years to share my own. So you are many, many years ahead of me. So I have enormous respect for anyone who comes on. And it's a fascinating story as well, because as you said, I know we'll move on in a second, but you said that with Dorothy, it was sort of that first few years obviously were the most difficult, like for a lot of people. And how is Dorothy now?
She's absolutely thriving. She's absolutely thriving. She's just a typical six-year-old child. She loves school play, she does gymnastics, rainbows, she did rugby last year. It doesn't stop her, like she doesn't, because she doesn't know that it could, you know. And we've never made it a negative, and it doesn't have to be a negative at all. Hirschsprung's doesn't stop people doing anything. And I do appreciate though that we have been extremely lucky with her Hirschsprung's, because I do appreciate that there are people out there that haven't had it so lucky. You know, I was listening to one episode where she did go in and she did get that phone call to say it's the whole bowel, you know, and that took me right back to the feeling. So I know we've been extremely lucky. But I also feel like, because they're now operating on her as a baby, her immune system had that chance to grow normally like it should have. which maybe, you know, didn't operate till 3 or 4. It would have been maybe a bit weaker. So I think with the advances in all the surgicals, the advances and all that, it's definitely helping.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Definitely. And you mentioned there about you're feeling very lucky. Not a lot of people who have a rare condition do feel very lucky. Something. Oh, why was it me? Why was it not the other 4,999 people? But I love that outlook. And that was another reason why I really wanted you on the show, was that you do have this positive outlook and this kind of like, yes, Dorothy has Hirschsprungs. Yes, she's been through, you know, all sorts, as we've mentioned. But like you said, she plays rugby, you know, and you would, some people might sit there and go, rugby, you know, but.
And I would have 6, 5 years ago. I mean, I took her to her first baby class and I was petrified, but I did it. And she, you know, hasn't looked back since. So, yeah, I get it. And like I say, when she got the diagnosis, I couldn't see her even go to school. Homeschooling was going through my, you know, all the, yeah. I mean, how do I protect her? But actually, like I say, because she had the operation so young, she doesn't know any, you know, all those things she had, prodding and poking and all these horrible things, people putting fingers where you don't want fingers being put. She doesn't remember any of it. It's not a memory for her. So to her, Hirschsprungs is just something she has. It's just a part of her. Like, she's got two hands. You know, it's not anything different. But she also knows that she's very special. She's rare. She's got her magic tummy. And like I said, that's what she calls it, her magic tummy. The doctor's fixed.
I love that. I love that phrase of magic tummy. I think that's absolutely fantastic. And like you said before, you turn it into a positive. And I think that's fantastic. And it speaks to the positive attitude that you seemingly all have, which I think is amazing. And just as we sort of wrap towards the end here, in terms of future for Dorothy, I know she said she's getting really, really well at the moment. What does she want to be when she grows up?
At the moment, she's really into horses.
Okay.
So anything to do with horses, I think it does change, but I'm really positive now that she can do anything.
Yeah.
Like I say, if I'd spoken to you 5 years ago, it would have been a different answer. But speaking now, I'm really, really happy with how she's getting on. And I do say lucky, because we are lucky. She's got Hirschsprungs, but it could have been a lot worse. And I know people have stomas, and I know they cope extremely well with stomas. And again, a stoma doesn't stop you doing anything. A stoma's not anything to be ashamed of at all. But I am very grateful that she didn't have to go down that road. It just made it easier for us, because me and James don't know anything about that. So I mean, the one question I think we'll always have is why she got it. Because there's no history. And if you were going to play the game, it should have been my son, because he's a boy. Do you know what I mean?
It's like you said previously, with so many questions and going, well, it can't be Hirschsprungs because she's a girl.
Just said to us in the hospital, she's a girl, it won't be Hirschsprungs. You know, no one in the family's got it.
Yeah. It's one thing that fascinates me is genetics, because I mean, I speak to people who it runs through their family. I speak to people like myself. I mean, I don't have any history of it at all, you know, going back, you know, centuries, nobody had Hirschsprungs. But then some people, it runs through the family, and I still don't really think there's a satisfactory answer that I can give or anybody else can give.
No, and I think that's another one of the Hirschsprungs mysteries, isn't it? It's why does it happen? I mean, again, I speak for myself as the mum. I struggled a lot in the early days of, did I do something, you know, during the pregnancy, because they say it forms quite quickly. So you go down that road, you know, what did I do? Did I do something? But I now know, no, it wasn't anything I did. But again, it was definitely, something I battled with in those early days. And it's taken, my husband has supported me through this, and he's always said, no, you know, he's, no, it's nothing you did. So, but sometimes you need to figure that out yourself. oof. But yeah, we're like fantastic support, family, friends. You know, they were always asking how she is. They were always supportive in the early days, there when we needed them. So we are really, yeah. I know you said it's funny to say lucky, but yeah. She is one of the lucky ones in that respect.
Fantastic. Thank you ever so much for sharing Dorothy's story and coming on the show. Just lastly, you know, if people want to keep up to date with how Dorothy's doing, I know you share on your Instagram. Where can people find you?
I am on Instagram. I think it's gem_boggs, gem_boggs. And I used to share a lot. I don't share so much anymore because she's obviously a little bit older.
Yeah.
But we still do things. And I'm, you know, I have a few followers and I follow people that we've met through Hirschsprungs and only through Hirschsprungs. And it's really a nice community, I think, to be part of. So I'm really, really happy to be on here, Tom. And I'm so glad of what you're doing because spreading the message of Hirschsprungs is wonderful.
That's my pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout.